picture this. You're scrolling through your feed and suddenly, bam, you land on an incredible live stream and someone's sharing secrets about nurturing that stunning plant you've been eyeing. You're instantly hooked, asking questions, laughing, and joining vibrant conversations with passionate plant lovers from all over the world.
These live streams aren't just about selling plants. They're hangouts, educational classes, and exciting community events. And while you're waiting for your next favorite seller or educator to go live, join chat channels similar to Discord, where the fun never stops and plant friendships flourish.
Feeling inspired, you decide it's time to buy your dream plant. Here's the best part. It's not just a transaction. You're connecting directly with amazing sellers and becoming part of a genuinely engaged community. Need any tips? Have any questions? Want to celebrate your plant's first ever bloom? Overgrown Oasis community is always eager to support, guide, and cheer you on.
Overgrown Oasis is more than just a platform. It's your new plant-loving adventure and community home. So dive into the excitement, connect deeply, and watch your plant dreams bloom alongside friends. You can find Overgrown Oasis by visiting overgrownoasis.com.
Your ultimate plant-loving community awaits. Wait, were you recording for the Michael episode?
Oh wait, we gotta do our intro. This is gonna be our intro.
Oh yeah,
this is gonna be our intro for the Michael episode.
Okay.
Hey. Oh, it's okay. Hey guys, I'm Lydia.
Hi, I'm Jesse.
And I'm Adam. Let's talk Hoya.
Today is another guest episode, and we're super excited to have Michael Green here at the Hoya Archive on Instagram. Michael, hello.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Hola.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for joining us today on the pod.
Woo. Of course.
We're super excited to have you. So, later at the end of the episode, we'll definitely direct people to your Instagram and things like that. But I remember the first time seeing your page, and it was super interesting because you had all of this archived Hoya and Deschidia material. And so we're just super excited to chat with you and get to know more about you and the work that you do, and, have our listeners get to know you a little bit as well.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk with you guys and share what I've gathered and what I've learned over the years.
Awesome. Perfect. Well, Michael, tell us more about you. Tell our listeners more about you.
I've actually been doing this for that long. I kind of got into plants during COVID, kind of a lot like everyone else. But by trade, I'm a graphic designer. I've been working in the industry for 3 or 4 years. Took a college program for it as well for 3 years. I love history and nature, so I've just spent a lot of my time studying things and looking, just going down niches and little rabbit holes and finding interesting little bits of history and kind of linking it with nature.
Love that. So graphic design, huh?
Yeah. So it's kind of a dream come true for an Instagram page and for creating articles and such. The things kind of harmonize together, I guess you'd call it, my history, my nature, interests, and then my graphic design. It all just kind of comes together well, I think. So it just gives me the tools and the knowledge to design everything and it look cohesive. But yeah. The rest is just a lot of research.
Oh, yeah. I bet. That's awesome that you're into graphic design because, as we're, doing Let's Talk Hoya and stuff, every once in a while, the topic always comes up. And yes. We're like, why didn't one of us study graphic design? This would have been so much easier if we had the knowledge.
True.
Oh, my God. It was such a fun program, to be honest. I made lots of friends there.
Where did you go to school, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, I went to Durham College, which is it's in the GTA, which is the Greater Toronto Area. So I live in Southern Ontario, kind of near to Toronto. So the area surrounding Toronto is just kind of colloquially known as the GTA, Greater Toronto Area.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
And so you said that you got into plants during like the COVID time. Did I hear that right?
Yeah. So when I was younger, I had a kind of a milder passion for plants, I guess you could call it. Mm-hmm. Growing up, my mom had plants around the house. She had just like the kind of the classic plants. Like she had a Sansevieria. She had like a Pothos, which is Epipremnum, of course. And then she had this giant book of plants that I got into one day and saw all these exotic, crazy looking plants. And I remember for Christmas one year, I had asked my parents to get me something plant-like. So they got me this like carnivorous plant kit where you grow from seeds, and they kind of failed. I mean, as like a 12 or 13 year old, you don't really care that much. You're just like, all right, I planted the seeds. I watered them. They're going to become plants right now. Right. I don't have to do anything else. So that kind of failed. But I also, when I was younger, kind of got interested in something called lithops, which are like the living stones plants.
Yeah.
I had a heck of a time trying to find those. But when I did find them, they rotted time after time and time again. But so I kind of went dark on plants for a little while. I was like, do I have a black thumb? Do I have like a black thumb? And so I was super discouraged. And I kind of moved into another passion of mine, which was like rocks and minerals and gems. And I stayed with that for a little while. But yeah, like we were talking about, I got into plants during COVID. So during just like around college time as well, I had some free time during my summer. And I took some cuttings of my mom's Epipremnum, her Pothos, that she had for around 25 years, I think. She had it at her work and then she brought it home. And I was thinking to myself, well, where can I get more plants? And so I started going shopping in plant stores and stuff. And I bought a ZZ plant, which is Zamioclocus zamifolia. And that kind of turned into a mild obsession for a little while.
That's the one that started it for you.
Yeah, exactly. So I went on like this absolute deep dive and was searching hashtags on Instagram and Googling and Reddit and Facebook and everywhere I could think of. I was searching different like varieties and cultivars and phenotypes of Zamioclocus, and I would kind of put them on Instagram. I made a page called Zamioclocus Zami, and I posted a whole bunch of them on there and just kind of said, do with this what you want. They're not mine, but they deserve all to be in one place so they can be easily found. So nobody has to do what I did and go down this massive rabbit hole of trying to find a whole bunch of them.
Wait, is that still an active Instagram page?
No. So I changed the Instagram handle from that, and it was for a little while, it kind of sat dark after I got discouraged with ZZ plants, just because they kind of just sit there and they don't really grow that actively. So it's not really so exciting. So it kind of sat dark for a couple of years and just sat there. And I started getting into Hoyas. That was around COVID times. I would say it was about 2021. I started seeing pictures of things like Hoya carnosa Wilbur Graves, Hoya carnosa Gray Ghost, and
the
Hoya
Silver
Carey.
Era.
Yes, I was absolutely obsessed. I was like, these are so nice. I need to have them. And then I looked at the price tag and I'm like,
absolutely not.
Maybe I'll start with some easier ones and then work my way up to the more expensive ones so I don't kill the most expensive one as my first plant.
So that's that's a logical choice you made there, Michael. And I want to say that I'm very proud of you for doing that.
Truly, so proud of you.
I lead with the heart, and
you're illogical. Definitely better than the rest of us there.
Buy with your head instead of your heart. I know it's tough to do sometimes. Sometimes I buy with my heart instead of my head. Mm-hmm. But so I went on Facebook Marketplace because I couldn't really find that many Hoyas at the time in 2021 in garden centers nearby.
Yeah,
that wasn't until around 2022 when they started stocking them readily in the greenhouses nearby. So I purchased a heirloom Hoya carnosa from a lady about an hour north of me where my work was. And I grew that one for a while. That was a really dark, large leaf Hoya carnosa. And I grew that one for about a year and a half, and it died to what I thought was just negligence, but I later found out was flat mites, because I was like, you know what? That's why it wasn't growing.
Those little bastards. Yeah. Those little bastards, I tell you what.
The great flat mite pandemic, I swear.
Yeah. It was such a thing. And I thought that I was just like, these plants just don't grow. They must be really slow. And I think everyone thought that for a little while, until everyone kind of like was like, by the way, there's these bugs on your plants that are really tiny and you can't see them.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I remember like, okay, so it's wild to hear your version of like trying to find that Hoya on the market. Because when I started with plants in like 2018, I couldn't find Monstera. I could not find just a green form Monstera.
Really? And it's Monstera is everywhere.
Isn't it insane? Yeah. And
in
I think
the garden centers near me,
I even had like an allocation and all that stuff, but like they never had Monsteras. I got one from New York, like just a random cutting from a bodega, and brought it home on the train. And that was my first ever Monstera. But like, it's wild to me. You know, because even in the early 2000s, I think that they talked about like copious amounts of baskets of like polyneura that they were just tossing away, and like all of these Hoya that people were just like not wanting. And it's just so cyclical.
That's so sad that so many Hoyas went to waste.
I know. But yeah. Okay. Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt your
That's
flow.
Okay. But now that you mentioned Monstera, it's funny. That was a plant that I wanted to grow for a long, long time. But at the time, before I got into Hoyas and when I was just starting to get into plants, I was like, I'm going to get a Monstera and it's going to go into my small bedroom at my parents' house and it's not going to be an issue. And thankfully, it didn't even become an issue, because I think it was like a small form and it was really like spry, whatever like you call it, like the internodes were really long. So I think it was the small form Borzigiana. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? I want the big leaves and I want the short internodes, but I logically cannot have a massive giant plant in my bedroom because it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, as you say that, literally, like from where I'm sitting, because we record at Adam's house, and literally his Thai constellation is right in front of me. And the size of this thing, I mean, it takes the size of like half of a bedroom, basically. It is massive. It's so huge. So I could imagine.
They're absolutely to die for.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's bigger than I am, which says something.
A few years ago, my partner, Connor, and I, my fiance, we went to the Montreal Botanical Garden, and they have a massive outdoor area with like Japanese gardens and Chinese gardens. There's an Aboriginal garden, but they also have a really large enclosed glass house.
Oh.
It's like a series of connected glass houses that you walk through. There's like a desert one and a tropical one
and
so on. There's like an orchid one. Barely any Hoyas. But
that's how it always is.
A colossal, colossal Monstera that was like up clinging to the wall, and it was a variegated one, and it had fruits on it. And it was like, this is incredible.
Wow. Sometimes I just have dreams of, okay, but like living in Florida, but not Florida, where I could just have.
No, I totally know.
Yeah, where I could have the palm tree.
I would love
to
live in Florida, but without the hurricanes and without the crocodiles.
And the pythons, the politics.
But an idealized Florida.
But like, how beautiful would it be to like look in your backyard and see your Thai constellation just climbing the F up a palm tree,
and
like,
then you don't have to worry about it. It could just keep on growing and do whatever it wants to do and be in nature.
And then I could get my window back. Anyway.
Oh, I'm even jealous of people in like the southern states, like California, where you can just do that. I've seen pictures of people planting monsteras just like up on the side of their house.
What a dream. What a dream.
Literally could not be us here.
To like negative 30 here, I could totally do that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry, minus 30 Celsius, not Fahrenheit.
Oh, I don't know the conversion. Okay, okay. Like, I don't either, but it sounds, you said negative, and that's a no for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's chilly.
That's pretty cold. Yeah.
Okay. So you were telling us, though, about, you know, the Carnosa is the one that's been the one that kind of, you know, stole your heart into, you know, collecting Hoya, which I love. But yeah, tell me, you know, more about that. And even more so, you know, I think there's also this, you know, to go from the Hoya collector to I'm going to look up, you know, Hoya information and try to dig up, you know, more information from the past about these plants that I love is like a whole nother thing. So like, I would love to know about that too.
Yeah. So Hoya carnosa being kind of the first one that I got was the first one that I looked into and kind of did some research. It's nothing like the research I do now, but I kind of heavily researched it. I couldn't find things like Fraterna and the Hoyan, which are like some of the older journals and such, but I did find things like just old forum websites and such where it listed all different cultivars. And I'm like, wow, there's no way. Like there's so many cultivars of just Hoya carnosa. And I tried looking for pictures of all of them. And of course you can find pictures of a decent amount of them, but a lot of these cultivars just became lost over time. Mm. Other ones were more popular, or sometimes they were a weaker cultivar and it kind of just died off. But I really fell in love with Hoya carnosa, especially because there's these stories you hear of people getting them from their mom, and then her mom got it from her grandma, and the grandma got it from the great grandma. And there's these other stories, like I think another guest on your podcast said in a Q&A, it might have been, where she said that her great grandma or something snuck one over in like a coat.
Oh yes, over into the States. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's just so quirky, and I love it. And it kind of shows the lengths people are willing to go to bring these heirloom plants through the different generations. And I absolutely love that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Adam has a story like that, and he has, you know, a huge heirloom carnosa. And one of my best friends, I have a piece of her family's heirloom carnosa. And it's just, you know, so cool, like to have a little piece of that and a plant that was part of just like generations and generations, and to continue that on is something that's really unique. So I get it and I love it.
Michael, do you ever look around your collection and think, which one of you ladies is going to be my heirloom? Like, I always wonder that, like if people think that, because there are some Hoya that I'm like, this is going to be with me the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I think that's probably going to be my Hoya carnosa argentia picta.
Okay. I love that.
The outer variegated silver one. Mm-hmm. It's been my obsession ever since I saw it the first time. And once I got one, I was absolutely validated because it's sitting next to me right now. It's like my prized plant.
I love it. Is that the one I have over there that's just been two leaves for like a good part of 7 months?
Yes.
Yeah.
Probably. They're like notorious for being a statue.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Cool, cool, cool.
But yours is growing well for you. is that God, what I'm hearing? Wow.
It's growing wild. It's really big. It's got with pink tint all over the white.
Okay, Flex.
It's really quite beautiful. Wow. I'll have to send you a picture later.
Yeah. Please do. Yes. Actually, I would love that. We would love to see it. Oh, that's amazing. And so, you know, now you have the Hoya archive, and if people haven't seen it, you know, go on your Instagram and you see like these posts that you make about all of these articles from years and years and decades ago. And so what kind of inspired, you know, you starting that?
I would say what goes back to me researching Hoya carnosa, when I found the names Crimson Queen and Crimson Princess, I was like, well, those must have came from the same place because they both have like the Crimson name. They both have like the K. And so I started searching up, where did these come from? And it came from a nursery in Florida called B.L. Cobia. And so I was wondering if the nursery created any more. And lo and behold, there's like a whole bunch of them. There was Crinkle 8, there's Argentia picta, there's Regalis, and there's Marginalis. And so I wanted to start kind of documenting these things because a lot of them were lost. Like there was Verna Jeanette, which is like the precursor to Argentia picta, and it's completely gone into obscurity. Almost nobody knows about it anymore. If you search it up, you're going to find four or five different things about it, but that's about it.
What was that again?
Verna Jeanette. That was
Verna Jeanette.
Yeah, Verna. And it is
so.
Yeah, but your article was the first time I heard about that in Stemma. That was the first time I'd ever heard about that Hoya.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's a lot of people's first introduction to ever hearing that name. But it's actually the wife of Larry Cobia.
Oh my god! Who was
the founder of BL Cobia? So he named it after her, and it stayed on the market for a few years, and then they found a mutation on the Verna Jeanette plant. And then isolated that mutation and named it Argentia picta as a little bit more marketable. And then they gave it the trademark Silver Princess.
Oh, that got the but Silver Princess.
Again, okay. That's one that a lot of people haven't heard of either, is Silver Princess, which is actually pretty shocking because everyone calls Hoya carnosa tricolor. They call it Crimson Queen. They call Hoya carnosa rubra. They call it Crimson Princess. But Silver Princess kind of faded away, but... Yeah.
Okay. Well, Elsa, we got to get Elsa back in the. We got to get Elsa back in the chair. I do want to know if you could give me and the audience a quick rundown of the difference between a cultivar, trademark, the whole trademark thing kind of confuses me still sometimes because you see companies like Costa Farms come out with these Hoya varieties that are very much a difference, like a species, but they have a fun name for it, which is a trademark name, I'm assuming.
And they do it for like Apremnum and ZZs. And technically they say you're not supposed to like propagate and resell that whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
Right. So Proven Winners is also very notorious for this.
Yes.
They have, there's I think a species of Finis Bertoni that they have three different trademarks on. I think there's like Shining Sea Star, and then there's two other ones that I can't remember right at the moment. But I find it helpful to think of it like this. Like every Hoya carnosa tricolor is an outer variegated carnosa, but not every outer variegated, oh my gosh, not every outer variegated carnosa is a tricolor. And it further helps if you think of it like Kleenexes are tissues, but tissues aren't all Kleenexes. And so the same thing is kind of with Crimson Queen, where they're not Crimson Queen. It's a Kleenex, but they're marketing it under a name to make it easier to sell. So that was kind of the idea behind Larry Cobia and giving it both a patent, which was tricolor, and a trademark, which was Crimson Queen. So Crimson Queen was solely a name to sell it.
So okay, interesting.
And only for plants that he made.
Okay, so that he patented the name tricolor, but he trademarked
he patented the plant as Hoya with tricolor variegation. It established it as a cultivar. So that's how kind of Rachel came up with tricolor. Even though it's called Hoya with tricolor variegation, it's Hoya carnosa tricolor.
Gotcha. Okay.
So interesting.
That is very interesting to me. Like this is the whole process, especially when I see like a Hoya fitchii or what I assume to be a Hoya fitchii or fitchii. I still don't know if it's EI. at a store called like Hoya sea anemone. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. The teacup anemone.
But like, why? How can they do that? That's what I don't understand is like, because that doesn't appear any different to me. This is not why you're on this podcast right now, but I love the
it's
combo.
Pretty convoluted if you ask me. I don't know what the purpose of creating both a cultivar name and then not just why wouldn't you just name the cultivar Crimson Queen?
Yeah.
What was the point of calling it tricolor if you were just going to resell it as Crimson Queen? I'm not too sure why he did that. I would have loved to ask him, but unfortunately he passed some years ago.
But really, it's like on point for Hoya, though, because I feel like a lot of things are kind of like that.
No, 100%.
You know, and so it's like, well, you know, it's Hoya. Of course it's like that. Why wouldn't it be?
No other genus but Hoya.
Exactly.
always something. But even just like hearing you talk about that really just like instills in my mind, you know, it says on your Instagram, you call yourself the botanical history aficionado. And to me, it's like, it's this, like, you know, like this information that you found and you share and you're so passionate about. But yeah, I mean, tell us more about that too. And, you know, being a botanical history aficionado.
So what that kind of entails for me is that, like, I collect a lot of both digital files for things. Like I collect different, when I see posts about things, or when I find articles, or when I dig up things from archives and such, like the Internet Archive and such, I download it all to my personal drive so that I know if that website goes down, I still have a copy. But I also have like physical copies of some things, though that takes longer because of course you have to pay money for physical copies of things. But I do collect like historical nursery catalogs. So I have a couple nursery catalogs in my collection. I think I've shown a couple of them to Adam and maybe to you ladies as well, if he shared them.
I don't think I shared them.
Wow, what a gatekeeper.
Oh my gosh, you kept them all to yourself.
That's right.
Yeah, I think I shared with you the digital file for the endangered species catalog, yes. Which was a lady in California, and she had all these beautiful hand-drawn illustrations of Hoyas.
Amazing.
And
she did.
Before I bought this catalog, I guarantee you almost nobody probably had heard of this place before I found this catalog. But she had like an unmatched amount of Hoya species. Like wow. when I saw this, I was like, how was nobody talking about this? Why was this not in Fraterna? Why is this not in Hoyan? But she must have been sort of obscure, but she had a crazy collection.
That is so amazing. So to you, like part of your collection is even like acquiring these materials.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's a harder thing to do.
Yeah.
But I just really like to find like little pieces of information, connect them to each other and kind of dig up things that haven't seen the light in so long. And then you're like, wow, nobody has seen this in so long. Or if they have, they didn't know the significance of it, that people have been looking for this. Like me, I think Rachel Collette Conroy, if I mention Rachel, we both have kind of this passion for digging up like old information on Hoya cultivars. And whenever I find something, whenever she finds something, we share it with each other on Facebook, like Messenger, and we just save it to our drives. And I think she called it data hoarding. She showed me this subreddit of all these like-minded individuals. Not necessarily with plants, but they just save every little bit of information. Like I'll take screenshots of things in archives, and I'll label them all, and I'll put them in folders, and I have it organized just so. But
that's impressive. That is very impressive.
Yeah, and I love that you're like trying to make it accessible and like trying to like recirculate things to kind of like keep it alive and keep it going.
There's certain things I wish I could share, but I can't because some of these things I've received from institutions, like I've corresponded with Cornell University, with the Smithsonian. If you told me 5 years ago, I'd be reaching out to somebody at the Smithsonian. And I'd be like, what the heck are you talking about? Who reaches out to a museum and is just like, hey, do you have this catalog?
isn't that beautiful though? Like that your path led you there though. Like, I don't know. And like,
it's incredibly
the right kind of person. It landed, the inspiration landed on the right kind of person. And I love when the world presents that.
And you know what? These librarians and these archivists at these institutions, they love to hear from people like me and from anyone who is like this. They are more than willing to help. I mean, some institutions, like I believe it's UCLA, they have a program where if there's something in their archive, you can, they'll send up to 100 pages, I think, scanned.
Wow.
So that's been something that's been super useful to me. I was able to get an old Ed Hummel's Exotic Gardens catalog sent to me from them. And it helped me to find the origin for Hoya carnosa exotica. It was kind of thought to be from Hummel's Exotic Gardens, but me as in Rachel, hadn't seen like concrete evidence that it absolutely came from Ed Hummel, Hummel's Exotic Gardens. And I finally found it, and I think it was the 1954 catalog. It was listed a Hummel introduction, it said. So that was finally able to concrete that, yes, this is where it definitely originated. And to be able to tell like the stories of these plants, where a lot of people just, I don't want to just call it taking it for granted because that sounds mean. But in a way, like, no, just people don't know where their plants come from. And I think it's super fun to be able to share. Like, this is the guy that found the mutation, that isolated it and lovingly kind of cared for it and propagated it for 6 years until he could share it with the world.
Yeah. See, and then you're giving that story the proper care. And I think that's a beautiful thing, too.
Thank you.
What was that moment like when you found that? Because in my, like I was going to say in my head, I just picture you just kind of like sipping your coffee in the morning and you seeing that. And then it's just like a, oh my God moment. And
it's like finding a dinosaur. Yeah,
it's almost like your heart drops because you're like, am I looking at this? Like, is this actually what this is? Have I found it? Am I the one? Like,
yeah. Cause there's so many people out in the world, I think, that would just be like, oh yeah, it is Ed Hummel's, but then you and Rachel, and I could totally tell that she would be this type of person. I'm like, no, but we need facts. We need hard evidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But the little sound bit that just went off in my mind, like Michael, you seeing this and then having that moment of, is it me? Am I special? You know that sound that I'm talking about?
Yeah. It's funny. I was also thinking of like a different sound, but it was like, is he the one? Is he a keeper?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Oh, I love it. You know, I was just thinking, and I know this is like one of the questions a little bit later, but I just have to mention now, because I mean, some of that information that you have and that you even share, like in my mind, I truly was like, I mean, we do some research, right, to talk about things. And there's truly some things that we like just say, like, we are not going to talk about this because we don't even know where to start to find the information. Mm-hmm. And so even at that like very beginner level, it is very intimidating to try to find information. And just hearing you, then like I was wondering, like, what is Michael doing? Like, what lengths is he going to like get this information? And now I'm like, oh my gosh, like talking to the Smithsonian and like the lengths that you're going to get this information, I can only imagine. It's probably just so challenging too.
If I put it out like a word map, it would be like, you know, like a private investigator has like this board and there's like little strings connecting to things. And it's almost like that. If I were to describe it, like I find one name mentioned, or I'll find like a town name and I'll link that with the nursery name. And then it's different for everything, but you have to link certain words together and kind of make, sorry, messed up. You just kind of have to make these connections and link all these things together. And I find it super fun because it eventually often leads to somewhere. I mean, it doesn't always, but then you'll come back to it. And I even have a folder like called leads, where I have things that I haven't sorted out where they kind of meet up yet, but I know that they're going to be useful to me, so I save them.
See, but, yeah, this translates so much, I think, in life too, because like even in a work environment, sometimes like when you're consuming all of this information and you may have like seen a paragraph of something somewhere and you have a lead folder, but like when you finally have the full picture, you're like connecting it, and that feeling is amazing. Like you're like, oh wait, no, that's why this process happens, and I remember reading this and this article, and boom, it's exactly just like this firework of,
and you put it all together. Yeah. And it's so satisfying.
That is very satisfying. But I just got chills just thinking about it. I
completely sympathize with you.
Yeah,
that it's super difficult to especially start with research when you don't know where to start.
Yeah.
In terms of somebody who wants to get into research but doesn't know quite where to start. There's where I usually like to start is like Fraterna, which is the the posting for the International Hoya Association, which is sadly defunct. That was run by a few people, but there was like Ann Wayman and Dale Kloppenberg, Ted Green, all these late great names. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Hoyan from the scandalous Christine Burton, who ran the Hoya Society International. So I usually like to start there. I mean, some of the information in there can just be a little bit dated just because we've learned things since, but it's a really great starting point because it has all these accounts and all this information. And there's the Robins of people being like, I had this plant at this time. And sorry, a Robin, people are going to wonder what I'm talking about. Robin.
I am people.
It was, it's this thing they used to do where somebody would write something like a question, and then they would forward it to somebody else in the mail. And then that person would add to it, and then they would forward it to somebody else who would also answer it. And then it would go through this whole letter chain basically, and then end back up with the person it started with. And then it would get put into the issue of the month or the issue of the quarter, rather.
So it's kind of like a Reddit thread, but like physical.
A Reddit thread back in the 80s and the 70s. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That is so wild.
Let's take it back there again.
And we talk about that sometimes, how like back in the day, you know, like you're having a whole, because we were reading, what was it? I think it was it P.S. the Hoyan? Or it was Fraterna that we were reading. And in one of the issues, like on the back, it said, if you have any questions or having any issues, like send us a letter, we'll feature it in the next issue. And we were just saying like how funny it is, you know, you're having this pest issue, you take a picture of it, you send a physical copy of it to then be set in the issue, and like by then your plant's been dead too.
And then your plant is reeked with pests by the time it's dealt with.
Yeah.
Just to think, like, it is just wild. It's, we're just definitely, I can imagine, privileged.
Some lady being like, I see one scale on my plant, what should I do about it? And then like 4 weeks later, it makes it into the issue. And she's like, well, now my entire plant's covered in scale.
They're like, yes, that definitely is a pest. This is what you should do. And they're like, man, if only I knew 4 weeks ago, this would have been so much more manageable. Oh, that is just wild. So I know that you said that you have like a folder that says like leads and stuff like that. So I'm sure you have like material that, is there like anything that you're like focusing on right now, or any areas that you're, you know, hoping to find more information on?
Yeah. So my current focus, I'd say, is Hummel's Exotic Gardens, which was in California. He started off in Inglewood, California, and then he later moved to Carlsbad, California. And he also had a residence in Oceanside, California. This man just everywhere in California.
Gosh.
But there's so much more to be learned from Hummel's Exotic Gardens, because I, even in my collection, I have like 30 different catalogs, I'd say, from there. And that's just scratching the surface. I've reached out to Cornell University, and they have like a further 30 more different catalogs that could very well have information I'm looking for, but I can't ask somebody to scan 30 catalogs for me. So I'm kind of waiting for things to calm down a bit down south, and then maybe take a trip to Ithaca and go to Cornell and scan them myself.
Wow.
He said that I'm more than welcome to do so if I ever am in the area. So I'm going to take him up on that offer someday if he's still employed there.
Yeah, that would be so cool. Also, I'm reading a book that had a plot line that happened in Ithaca, which is just so random. But anyway, well, maybe not that random because it's a big place, but whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Some other focuses I have is I'm madly trying to figure out who released and named Hoya carnosa Wilbur Graves and who it was named after. I have one theory, but it's kind of out there and it doesn't fully make sense. And then I'm also trying to find out who released and named Hoya carnosa gray ghost, which is like the slower growing one that looks pretty much exactly like Nova ghost, but has a few different characteristics to it. But those are my my main focuses right now. But of course, if I find something else in my searches, I can easily get derailed and start going down a whole different path. It happens all the time.
So with your Wilbur Graves theory, do you feel comfortable sharing that if we kept that just in like Patreon only? Or do you want to share it on the pod? Or no, you would rather just keep it to yourself till you have more information? Because
I can share it. I mean, okay. It's just a theory.
I want to hear it.
But yeah, so in one of Dale Kloppenberg's books or journals, he writes near the beginning of it in like the dedicated to, he has, I think it was dedicated to my professor, George W. Graves. Mm-hmm. And the W, I don't know if it's Wilbur, but it, and also I can't find Wilbur Graves listed anywhere in Dale's catalogs. So I can't really say it came from him, but it's theoretically possible that it could be named after George W. Graves if W is Wilbur.
Yeah.
I guess what you could do is see where he went to school, at what time, and if during that time he was employed there as a professor, and if his name was Wilbur Graves.
That is a lead I do need to follow. I haven't followed that lead quite yet.
I just imagine
not
you
to make more work for you.
I just imagine you as the meme with the lady with like all the pegs and like string trying to like solve a murder or like a math problem or something. But it's just you trying to like figure out all these theories. I love it.
It's that, but a whole bunch of the papers have been lost over time.
Oh God, I can't imagine. Or like faded, wrinkled.
There's just like a big question mark, like gaps everywhere. Like that is so challenging. Yeah. Okay, but I hope you find more because I'm so intrigued now. I'm like with you there right now, Michael. I'm like, ooh, now I want to know. I want to solve this mystery.
I'm definitely going to share that when I hopefully solve it. So you can be the first to know.
Oh my gosh, what an honor.
That's so exciting.
I'd say probably my white whale, though, is like figuring out Grey Ghost because that's one that I really like. And I have a lot more leads into that one. Like I have a little Word document of different leads of different people I've spoken to. So I think that one's more likely to be solved before Wilbur Graves. But
okay. Gotcha. So would you say like that one is the one that's like the ultimate dream for you to figure out? Or is there any other like particular material or information that would be the dream for you to obtain? Like once you have that, you're like, this is it. I've made it in life.
Yeah. I think like I really just want to own more physical catalogs, especially from like Hummel's Exotic Gardens. He put out a lot of catalogs. I mean, I think I have one from 1941 is my oldest in my digital collection. But he was featured with his family in a 1935 newspaper advertisement by Quaker State Oil. And I own a paper clipping from that.
No way.
Yeah. Like a 19th, and it's clean, crisp. Like you wouldn't even know that it was from 1935. Wow. But I really want to own more catalogs from his nursery because I know there's so many more out there. I have leads of so many more other ones that exist. So it's just a matter of tracking them down. The things have popped up over the years. Like a couple years ago, before I was even researching him, I found archived a picture of like a vintage little like keychain flashlight that had Hummel's Exotic Gardens written on the side of it. And I'm like, oh my God, if only I knew in like 2019. Hummel's Exotic Gardens.
Oh my gosh. I feel like I just like listening to you talk about it is very exhilarating because it gives me the same feeling of like, you know, when you like know something exists, like a Hoya or something, and you're like, I really want this. And you're just looking for it everywhere and just trying to like find more about it, where you can purchase it, who has it. Like, that's kind of what it feels like, which I feel like is part of the hunt for some people when it comes to like the collecting aspect of it. And so it feels all exhilarating, like, ooh, like, you know.
It's funny that you mentioned that. Another like dream to like obtain kind of thing would be a verified Hoya carnosa Verna Jeanette. Like somebody has the tag on it still that says Verna Jeanette.
Oh my gosh.
I have a plant that Robert Cobia, who was the general manager at BL Cobia, he identified it as likely being Verna Jeanette, but I'll never know for sure, really. Especially since it's just like Adam's plant. It's just like a one node statue cutting that's done nothing since I got it. Mm. And the like the root system's super, super weak. It barely grows roots. Wow. I've tried to find like growth hormones and such to it. But I really want to own like a verified Verna Jeanette.
So that's the dream plant for you. That's the one. Okay, I see it. Man. I can only imagine, though, just hearing about like the people that you've talked to and things like that, just like all of the interesting stories or like the people that you've even talked to just trying to like acquire this material. And I know that you've shared some, but like I'm interested to know more. Like, do you have like another story or anything that you'd like to share with us that's happened during all of your research?
Yeah, I have a few little fun stories over the research I've done. So I'll start with a more of like a cool one rather than a funny one, which is when I was researching BL Cobia for my Stemma Journal article, I came across this Hoya carnosa compacta illustrated like sales card that had this beautiful giant like flat illustration of a Hoya carnosa compacta plant with this little man on a mat playing a flute to it. And it really spoke to me. And when I started writing the Stemma Journal article, I wanted some way to remember it forever, even though it would be in my head. And like, yeah, I wrote that.
Yeah.
But I wanted a way to permanently remember it. So I got it tattooed onto my arm.
Oh my gosh.
Kind of like a snake coiled around my forearm. I had somebody in Toronto kind of stylize it in their own style in like a stippled fashion. And I have the little man playing the flute to it, and it kind of climbs around my arm, kind of like a snake charmer.
And I love that.
Oh my God. Can we get a picture of that too?
I couldn't be more thrilled with how it turned out. I'll absolutely share it with you guys.
That is amazing. Okay. I have to ask though, was it your first tattoo?
It was my second tattoo, but it was my biggest tattoo. My other tattoo is, do you know when, like, if you peel open, like, the side of a juice box or, like, a cracker box, you'll see, like, the little squares of color?
Yes.
Okay, so
Like a print proof.
Exactly. So those are, like, print squares. So they're called crop marks and registration marks and color tests. So I have a cyan, a magenta, a yellow, and a black square with like crop marks for basically where like you cut the box to the shape on my arm. So that was my first tattoo in homage to graphic design. And then my second tattoo is the Hoya carnosa compacta in homage to my love of plants.
See, I do love that. I did see your tattoo of the CMYK, or maybe it's not CMYK, but regardless.
Yeah, it is. You got it.
Okay. I was like, now it makes sense, the graphic design. Because I was like, oh, that's a very unique tattoo for someone to have. And then it's all making sense now. And the book.
I get a lot of compliments on it when people see it. They're like, oh my God, what is that? And I have to tell them the whole, it's a Hoya. it's a really contorted, weird looking one, actually, that the leaves are the strangest thing you'll ever see.
Because I think I was like stalking a little bit, because sometimes whenever an Instagram account comes, like I need to see a person. Like it's so frustrating to me when I can't see a person, because I was like, I want to know who I'm talking to. Not you in particular. I wasn't saying that about you, but I was like looking through photos, and that's when I saw that tattoo. Anyway, story that you didn't need to hear, but that's what happened.
That's okay.
In my life.
Hola, Hoya friends. So we launched our Patreon, aka Peduncle Pals. It's been a joy connecting more with all of you, chatting in our Facebook group, and sharing more behind the scenes through our exclusive Patreon episodes every month. We're blown away by your support, and we're so grateful for every one of you that is joining us on this club. You can subscribe through our Patreon link through our Instagram bio, episode descriptions, or show notes. See you there.
Hey there, Let's Talk Hoya listeners. We're so glad that you're here joining us as we chat all about Hoya. And can you believe it? It's already been over a year since we've been doing this podcast, and it's just been filled with so many great memories. And most of those surround you, our listeners, and hearing from you all and getting to engage with you. And if you like what you're hearing, we hope you take a moment to leave us a review. Honestly, it means so much to us. They make us laugh and it brightens our day. And so we hope that you take a moment to do that. Be sure to connect with us on Instagram. You can find us at lets.talkhoya and check out our show notes. They're linked in our bio. We also have a Patreon community called Peduncle Pals, and we hope to see you there.
Another really exciting moment personally for me, I think it's up to now, well, not up to now, but in general, it's been my most exciting moment, was when I rediscovered all of Cobia's Hoya patents like full color.
Wow.
So up to the moment where I found them in color, they only existed, to our knowledge, our being me and Rachel, in black and white. Like, we could find them on the Google Patents website and the US patent website, but they were all in black and white, and they were kind of bad scans. Like, you could see lines going through them and stuff. So it wasn't a great way to be able to be like, this is Hoya Carnosa tricolor. That's how you can identify it when you're looking at a low quality black and white image. So when I found these, I was like, oh my God, they exist still. They're not lost to time. Like, I found these full color images, and they're nice quality. And you can finally see what actually exists as the cultivar.
That's so cool.
That is wild. That is so cool. And I'm sure, you know, like, Rachel was just as thrilled, because all the conversations that we've had, and, you know, that I have with Rachel, like, anytime I have a question, she's always the first one that I go to. And she always is like, oh yeah, like, let me tell you all the things I know. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is literally amazing. Really, like, is. I don't even know where you got all this information.
Yeah. And I can feel that. I feel the same vibe
conversations
from you, Michael. I feel like that same vibe from you. So I hope that's encouraging to you, because it's like, you guys have that same kind of like vibe and mentality,
and like the passion for it. You know, there's just like such a deep passion that's like palpable even just talking to you. So it's really cool.
Yeah, I'm here to share, you know, like, I'm an open book. If somebody has a question, I'm gonna answer it, and I'm gonna do it in a really respectful and nice way. There's people definitely in the Hoya community who get super frustrated, and they don't realize that people aren't, They just want to learn. They're not saying the wrong things because they want to say the wrong things necessarily. They just don't know any better. And it's okay that they don't know any better. They just, they want to learn. So.
Yeah. I love that attitude. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, 100%. And I feel like, you know, even us three here, you know, we definitely try our best, but we're not perfect. And there's just a lot of perpetuated misinformation, I guess, especially in this hobby. And because it's moving so fast, it's just easy for that to happen.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there is like grace that comes with, like, we're all learning. And, you know, if you have a growth mentality to learn more, then that's all you can really ask, you know?
For sure. I got another story for you if you want to hear it.
Oh, yes, please.
Yes, we are okay. Sat.
So I think it was either early spring or maybe late winter. I reached out to the Carlsbad, California Historical Society. And Carlsbad, if you remember, is where the Hummels moved to as their second and final nursery location.
Mm-hmm.
So the Hummels' son-in-law, he donated a whole bunch of material to the Carlsbad, California Historical Society. Now, they uploaded somewhere to their website, it was a PDF document that was basically just like an index of all of the stuff that was Hummel related in their collection. And I found this, and then I reached out to them and I said, is any of this digitized? Like, am I going to be able to access it? Because I'm way up in Canada. So I would love to come over and just see it in person, but I can't, unfortunately. Is any of it digitized? And they said, no, because unfortunately, because of budget constraints, we haven't had the resources to be able to scan it all in. But because you're up in Canada, and I sympathize with you that this is obviously your passion, and you're very excited to know some stuff, if you pick like a few of the things from the catalog, because there was like probably over 150 different like unique things. So I picked my kind of favorite, most important wants from the list. And in one of those things that they sent me was this little yellow card that was probably one of the last sales offerings from Hummel before he closed, because I think on the same card, it's like him offering up the rest of his collection and such in like a bulk price or the land. And then on the back of it, it lists Hoya Lacunosa, which I know you guys like. But he lists it as the nosegay Hoya. And I was like, what on earth is a nosegay? Wait, is this some sort of
nosegay
term? Like, is this a gay Hoya?
Oh my God.
So I immediately went to Google. I'm like, what is a nosegay?
Is it all one word or two words?
One word, nosegay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Continue your story. I'm sorry.
So it's like this little floral bundle, I think. It's like a bouquet, basically, of flowers, but
or a two.
I guess they had a different term for it at the time. Why didn't you just say bouquet?
Yeah.
So Hoya Lacunosa used to be known as the nosegay Hoya, if you believe it.
Wow. Okay, but they literally sent that to you.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I don't think they knew I was gay. I don't think they saw the nosegay part. I think they probably just scanned it and they're like, oh, here, we'll give this guy whatever he wants. I don't know what this is, but okay. Yeah.
That's so great, though, that you now have shared that information, because I am going to keep that tidbit in my head for a long time, forever, probably.
You're going to see every time you look at your Lacunosa, you're just being like, my little nosegay.
Yeah, because, you know, when we go to, my partner and I go to sleep, if like something in the bedroom's blooming, it's like a consistent thing that Steve's always like, something's blooming. And I'm just going to be like, yeah, that's a little nosegay of Lacunosa.
Use your nosegay.
Yeah.
And smell the nosegay.
Okay, but
yeah.
You're telling me right now, Michael, that if we go to Carlsbad, that there is Hoya information
that we could scan
that we
for
can
you.
Scan.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're near Carlsbad ever.
Listen, Michael, my kink is helping people.
I was just there. I was literally just in Carlsbad. Oh my God.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Well, earlier. Yeah,
they have a historical society and they have like a whole box of just like Hummel stuff.
Oh,
and I didn't have the
gosh.
Heart to ask for more, because I hate to ask for favors, especially when it's like taking time out of their day. So.
Okay.
Carlsbad Historical Society.
Road trip.
Let's go. It's literally only like 6 hour drive for us.
just 6 hours. It's nothing crazy.
Well, I mean, that never sounds crazy to me, but
we
do it
all the time. Yeah, that is true. We do it like all the time. I mean, we're always just like, oh, it's just California. Like, we can go whenever. It's only 6 hours away.
I'm actually going to California next weekend. Let me do a little side stop.
At the Carlsbad Historical
Society.
Excuse me. Are you going to stop by this historical society real quick?
I'm going to kidnap everyone I'm
with. We're here for the Hummels. Stick them up and no one gets hurt.
They know who I am. If you guys hear of a robbery in Carlsbad, it was not me.
You guys perpetuated a homophobic assault on my friend Michael, and I'm like here to get these boxes.
Revenge.
Just kidding.
I'm just going to take this nosegay card with me.
Yeah.
Okay. Alrighty, Michael. Well, when we head over to Carlsbad, we send you a 500 gigabyte. I don't know. What's a very large file number at?
Terabyte.
Terabyte. There you go. Terabyte.
You know what? I'm one to talk about long drives. I think it was probably 2017. I took a road trip with two of my best friends and my dad, and we drove all the way through the States. So we wanted to go. Wow. I wanted to go to the Tucson Gem Show.
Oh my and gosh.
Nobody was going to tell me no. And so we all just drove to Arizona.
Wow.
I love that.
So we drove through a whole bunch of states. I can't remember them all, but we went through Colorado, through the mountains, and we went through Las Vegas. Didn't go through California, but though we were very close to it.
Yeah.
And then went back up through like Texas and New Mexico. And it was
so you got all the views. Yeah. Oh, I love
okay,
that.
So you were into gems, like
Tucson. Yeah, that's gems. Seriously into gems. Yeah. To come out to that show. Oh, how was that show? I've always wanted to go, and it's like, it's right here.
I went once.
It
recently.
Takes over the entire town. I am not exaggerating.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Hotel rooms, motel rooms. People rent motel rooms just to put up desks and chairs and sell rocks in hotel rooms.
Yeah. Really?
Yes. Wow.
It's almost, it's wild.
It's massive.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it when I got down there. I was like, you have not been to a rock show until you've been to Tucson.
So worth the drive, I guess.
Michael's like, you're willing 100%. To drive 6 hours to Carlsbad, but you're not going to drive an hour to go down to Tucson.
You're already in Arizona, so.
I know.
It happens like February every year.
Yeah.
Yeah, every year I'm like, oh, I want to go. Maybe I'll go. And then I'm just like, oh, no, it's I missed it.
It is worth it. Look, and I'm going to get you a rose quartz penis and then it'll all be worth it.
Whoa.
Josie, say less.
Did somebody say rose? Anyway.
Oh, okay. One thing that we didn't get to, because I just got really excited after hearing about like the lengths that you went to getting all this information was, you know, I mean, this is a Hoya podcast. And so, you know, we're talking about the Hoya, but I know you're also into Deshidia. And so, you know, wanted to give you a moment to shout out the Deshidia love too.
Deshidia shout out. I recently got into those actually. So it wasn't until like last fall where I started collecting them. I went straight into the deep end. I was like, I'm not buying anything common. I'm not going to buy a Deshidia ovata or a Numelaria. I'm only buying the weird, crazy, like uncommon ones. So I started with Deshidia vidali, which was incorrectly called Deshidia pectinoides. It was, it's been synonymized into Deshidia vidali because it's the older publication. But last fall, I started collecting them. And the genus Deshidia is really, really closely related to Hoya. So a lot of the times they're mixed up with each other. Like you'll see people posting. Like a good one that I can think of recently was in the Hoya identification group. Somebody posted a Deshidia parasita and they said, is this a Hoya shepherdi or is it a something else? And so we asked for bloom flowers and or bloom flowers, bloom photos.
Could
and
you
luckily
show me
she
your
had
nosegay?
Some to share. Can you show me your nosegay?
Gosh.
That's the terminology for asking to see somebody's Hoya flowers.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Especially when it's a really smelly one.
Someone trademarked that.
Yeah, the nosegay.
Yep.
Okay, but I'm like randomly looking at Deshidia right now, and there's a Deshidia platyphylla, and people have them trailing. So, and it's adorable. So I want one.
Send
it. The platyphylla is one of the shingling ones. So there's three main like types, I would call it, of Deshidia. So I kind of found this out in a old Dutch publication called Hoya Newsbrief. And he names them as the shingling Deshidias, which are like Deshidia imbricata, Deshidia platyphylla, Deshidia cochleata. Cochleata, you may have seen on my story. It's got those orange flowers with the blue tips on them.
Yes.
And they look like little urns. So all Deshidias have those little urn-shaped flowers. And then there's the Deshidias with modified like hollow leaves, which is the Domasia. I believe you talked about those with
Vess.
What was his name? Vess, yes.
I love Vess.
I remember him talking about those, the Domatia.
Yes.
And so some of those are like Deschidia major, which is also sometimes known as Deschidia rafflesiana. And then Deschidia vidali, which is also sometimes sold as Deschidia pectinoides. So those are the ones, they have two types of leaves on the same plant. They have a normal, just small, unassuming leaf that's, you would think, oh, that's just a normal Deschidia. And then when it gets a little bit more mature, it gets a leaf that's completely hollow on the inside. And a root just below the node goes inside of the leaf and forms a root system inside of the leaf. And then that system has grown so that ants can live inside of the leaf. And they'll make a nest inside the leaf and give it nutrients from pooping and from bringing in nesting material into the leaf. And you can see these in some publications. They have pictures of the leaf, like a cut open cross section kind of the leaf. And you can see inside of it, there's roots and there's debris and there's sometimes ant eggs and stuff. Wow. So it really shows like the close relationship that Deschidia have with ants, even more so than some Hoyas. But the shingling ones also are closely allied with ants. So they'll live under the leaves rather than inside of them, like the Domatia ones.
Wild.
And yeah, so that's why one of the cooler plants I have, whenever I tell people like in the wild, ants would live inside of that, they're like, I told my mom and she like squealed and she backed up from it. I'm like, Mom, it's okay. There's no ants in it right now.
That's really funny.
That is so nerdy. And that is so cool. Like just that knowledge lives in your brain. And now
I think that's going to be my test. That's my litmus test now for humans. When I meet them, I'm like, how do you feel about Deschidia? And if they're like, Deschidia are amazing, I'm like, you're a good person.
Yeah. It's so cool that like ants have allied themselves with a plant and the plant has allied itself with the ant. Like it's a symbiotic relationship where the ant provides for the plant and the plant provides for the ant.
The ants even
are the ones that are responsible for pollinating Deschidia flowers. So Deschidias have very, very, very small flowers and some of them are even closed, like Deschidia cochleata. I have no idea how that gets pollinated because the opening is like microscopic. I can't get in there. I've tried opening it and I just destroy the flower, but somehow an ant pollinates that. Whereas with Hoyas, it's usually a moth or a wasp that does it.
Yeah.
Just wild.
And then we got the third section of Deschidia, which is the one with quote unquote normal leaves. I mean, I don't want to call them normal because everything is a little bit different. Like there's Deschidia singularis, which kind of looks like a cross or propeller.
Oh, yes. Those are so cool.
Just out in the middle.
Yes. Those are really, really cool, actually. I
have another one called Deschidia tomentella. That one is, it's got like these taco shaped leaves. They're black. They're kind of a tiny bit fuzzy. It looks like if you took like a Hoya weyeti, shrunk it down a whole ton until it was like the size of a pea and then made it completely black.
Oh, they're so cute. Oh my gosh. Those flowers are tiny.
Yeah. They're tiny, 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 tiny flowers. They're one of the smallest Deschidia flowers I've seen.
Oh, they're so tiny.
I got into a bidding war trying to get that plant.
Oh my God, send that to me too.
Holy cow. So really what you're telling us is, all you Hoya people, here is the wonderful world of Deschidia. Get into Deschidia too.
I really want Deschidias to be more widespread. They deserve the attention. They deserve the love. They're just like your Hoyas, but a lot of the times they're smaller or they're more like niche in the way they've evolved, like with the hollow leaves or the shingling leaves. Like Hoyas only have Hoya embricata for the shingling leaves, whereas Deschidia have like a whole bunch of them.
Question that I was trying not to interrupt you, and now I'm pausing because I lost it.
That's okay. I'm sorry if I'm like info dumping.
You are not.
No, this is not at all great.
It was about Deschidia in like Hoya people. Oh, here it is. It was something stupid. So that's why I forgot it. Do Deschidia also get flat mite? Probably, because I've found flat mite on my prayer plant.
I've never seen them upon like examining my deciduous, but I would assume that that's possible because they feed on the sap. So they get their little mouths into the cyst stem near the internode usually, the node, and they'll suck the sap out of the stem, which slowly kills your Hoya.
The worst, literally the worst.
But yeah, I would think probably deciduous can be affected as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow. Good to know. Yeah. Okay. So Michael, since you are a Canadian and we only know.
Is that what they say? I'm sorry if that was offensive. Is it Canuck?
Canuck.
Michael has left the chat.
That's a Vancouver.
Yeah. Okay. Is that a racist thing?
Yes. That's the NHL team.
Oh, okay. Listen, I have only been to Alberta.
Not you saying things that might be like racist, Alberta, and offensive.
That's like the Texas of Canada.
I know, ouch. But I went to Banff and that was beautiful.
Oh my God, I can't wait to go there someday. It's incredibly beautiful from what I've seen in the photos. But you see that all around Canada too, in different areas. So I'm in Ontario and there's an area, a national park near me called Bruce Peninsula National Park. And if you look at the pictures of the water there, it looks like you're in like Italy and you're on like the cliff sides.
Oh my
gosh. It's like crystal clear turquoise water. And then you jump in and it's the Georgian Bay of Lake Huron and it's freezing cold.
Dang.
Year round. But to your question about like
market here. Yes, because I feel like, you know, I mean, we're based in the United States. And so everything that we talk about is always going to be based in the US because that's where we are. That's what we know. And so, yeah, we always like to ask like people who are in different regions and areas, like, what are things like for you? You know, how is the plant market? Is there a big Hoya collective? You know, always curious.
Yeah. There's not like an organized Hoya collective like there used to be in the States, like the different Hoya societies that used to exist down there. Mm-hmm. But it's still a relatively big market. It's just that it's highly competitive. So there's less people to buy. There's still a lot of people, but comparatively to the States, there's less people. So there's, of course, then less sellers. And then once the people that want a plant have it, and they've purchased it at the peak price, it drives the price down a lot faster than what I've seen in the States.
Wow.
So things can, depending on the plant, some things will be more expensive for longer up here, like Jody Silver, because only a few people here have it, or Oblak, again, because only a few people have it and it's so slow growing. So it depends on the plant, but some things like the variegated Hoya Matilde, I saw that plant drop in price a lot faster than what it did in the States. It was a large drop overall, even in the States, from what I saw in the U.S. Hoya market group. But I would say it fell in price a little bit faster here. I had a lot of trouble selling it when I got it and grew it out a bit. Mm. I was probably one of the first people to get it. I got it from a small greenhouse north of Toronto that illegally imported it from China. So they didn't do their paperwork. You can tell because it was shipped over in soil and you can't do that. So you can immediately tell that they've illegally brought it over.
Some of the best things in life are illegal. We're good.
You know what? You're completely right. Yeah.
And on this podcast, so we're good.
Yeah. I managed to get that plant at a good price for the time. Like if I were thinking of it, I think it was probably when I bought it around $600-$700 a node in Canadian dollars. And I got it at around $325 and I split the price with my friend. So I brought the plant home. She paid half, I paid half. And then when the plant grew a bit, we cut it in half and she got half and I got the other half. But by the time all was said and done, it was very difficult to sell the plant to other people and kind of recoup my investment. Mm. I've started to do so now, but just by selling it in larger amounts at a cheaper price. But that's all I'm really trying to do, is just kind of make the money that I've spent back. And then honestly, my prices when I get the chance to sell things because I have very little space to grow little props and stuff to sell. But when I sell them for what they should be rather than at a steep price.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even, I mean, that's a great price, what you mentioned, because even when if like that Hoya first hit the market here, I feel like it was like $1,000 a node. So,
yeah, I mean, the lady who owned the nursery told me she had this price so low because they were a new nursery and they wanted to get people in the doors to look around at the plants they had. So they, it was kind of like how grocery stores sell some things at a loss just to get you in the doors and looking at other things to make money.
Yeah, man. But a beautiful, gorgeous plant though. So
absolutely. They're like a little mini of the Hoya carnosa Madara green edge with the speckling on them sometimes. It's really quite a beautiful plant.
Really a gorgeous plant.
That's another loose end where I need to figure out who that came from.
Oh.
So that we can give it its own cultivar name because Mathilde is green. It's not variegated. So it can't technically be Mathilde. It's just that in the absence of a true cultivar name, it's been called Mathilde intervariegated because there's no other name to give it.
Very interesting. Mm. Very interesting. But I wonder if it's one of those Hoya that were, you know, cultivated in China.
I believe so, yes.
I wonder how easily you're able to track it down or who it is that did it. Because I feel like their market is, it's definitely a little bit more of an interesting market.
I managed
market.
To track down the name of the person, but when I asked the person, not the person who made it, but the person who gave me the name, I said, well, does this person have any way for me to contact them? Like, do they have Facebook or Messenger? And he said, no.
Oh, interesting. So
looks like you have to buy a flight to China.
You're right. Show up at some random nursery in like the outskirts of like rural China.
Hey, but you know.
Not speaking a lick of Mandarin.
Oh, I love it. And I just love everything that you've shared with us, Michael. And so thank you so much for, you know, taking the time. As we wrap up, you know, would love to know kind of what's next for you. What's next for the Hoya archive or even, you know, your collecting as a collector.
I have a few plans in the works. Like I'm working on another article already for Stemma Journal. If people don't know, I was the author in the most recent Stemma Journal, where there was an article called From the Garden of the Leprechauns, and that was about B.L. Cobia, the nursery that created things like Tricolor Crimson Queen and Crimson Princess Rubra. But I'm planning another article right now. It's in the works. It just has to go through edits and through peer reviewing. So the chief editor of Stemma, Mark Randall, he goes through a lot of processes to ensure that everything is up to par and accurate. And so he vets it through different students and he has people peer review it. So it's kind of just before the process of that, I'm making the finishing touches before I send it off to him to make the edits. I'm not going to spoil the details, but it's for another nursery that it's really important to Hoya history, and I'm really excited to share it with people.
Oh, sneak peek!
Michael, love it. I mean, we're probably going to say this multiple times while we close out, but I just really appreciate that you take this kind of approach with your research and then share it. Like, I know it seems like it's like, oh, everyone should do this, but not everyone does that. So I want to let you know that I think it is a special thing that you're doing. And I think it is great that you're so willing to just, you know, share it with everyone. It's beautiful.
Thank you. I do think it's super easy to just like hoard your findings and be like, I am the only one who knows this and nobody else will ever know it and it dies with me type thing.
Yeah.
But it's more important to share it so that future generations are not in this kind of muddy, murky waters of like, hey, where did that plant come from? And it's like 300 years later and it's even harder to find the information. So it's super important, I think, to kind of archive, in lack of better words, all this material.
Gosh, do you think someone's going to listen to this podcast one in hundreds of years and they're going to be like, this Hoya was mentioned by Michael Green on this podcast?
They're in their like little Mars spaceship with like this like one little Hoya growing in their like little hydroponic garden. They're like, wow, this Hoya.
Growing Hoya carnosa out in like some Kepler planet or something.
That bitch, she would survive.
Yeah,
she
would. 100%. Mm-hmm. She's a
pretty bitch.
She is.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Michael, for just coming on here, giving us your time and spending it, you know, with us and chatting with us. And definitely, you know, your most recent article from Stemma and, you know, just some information about you. We're going to make a show notes about it and post it for anyone who's interested. But most definitely, you know, where is it that people can find you? Where can people find the Hoya Archive and kind of just help out on your journey?
Yeah, so I'm just on Instagram. I don't have a YouTube or anything, but I'm on Facebook with my personal page, which is just Michael Green. You may see me commenting on places like the Hoya Identification Group or sometimes the Hoyas 101 page. I lurk in like Hoya Obsession and Hoya Obsess. And I don't really post so much, but I look in US Hoya Market, just because it's such a big place and a lot of releases happen there. Mm. But on Instagram, I go by at the Hoya Archive.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. And so, you know, great information that's posted there. I did also see, I'm just going to shout it out. I don't know if you want me to, Michael, but I did see your link for buy me a coffee. And so, you know what, people, go buy Michael a coffee and help out with all the work that he's doing.
He's doing the hard work there.
Seriously, though.
That was a suggestion, actually, by Schlieff Tropicals when I did a live stream with them one time on Palm Street, and they suggested, I think it was Caleb suggested that I put like a little Patreon or a buy me a coffee link there just for people to help me out with expenses of buying catalogs and stuff.
Yeah. Staying away.
Optional, of course.
Yeah. And then, you know, your future trip to China so you can figure out the very good
trip
with
to
it.
Ithaca, my trip to Ithaca.
Yes.
So many places to go.
Carlsbad. You know, you got to come
believe in
you.
We believe in your, we just got to get you there and you'll get it.
Yeah. For sure.
We'd like to say thank you again to Michael for taking his time to sit here and talk with us and nerd out with us on Hoya. If you guys dig the vibe, please make sure you go over to Instagram and follow him. He gives so much information. He spends so much of his time to gather this knowledge. The least we can do is support him. Also, head to the show notes. They have all the links for his buy me a coffee, all of the things. But also you can find us over on Instagram. We are at let's.talkhoya. And you can also find your hosts individually. I am at NotDude.
I'm at thegreenplant.az.
And I'm at Perritos y Plants. Adios.
Anya.
Bye.
Bye.
Picture this, you're scrolling through your feed and suddenly, bam, you land on an incredible live stream and someone's sharing secrets about nurturing that stunning plant you've been eyeing. You're instantly hooked, asking questions, laughing, and joining vibrant conversations with passionate plant lovers from all over the world.
These live streams aren't just about selling plants. They're hangouts, educational classes, and exciting community events. And while you're waiting for your next favorite seller or educator to go live, join chat channels similar to Discord, where the fun never stops and plant friendships flourish.
Feeling inspired, you decide it's time to buy your dream plant. Here's the best part. It's not just a transaction. You're connecting directly with amazing sellers and becoming part of a genuinely engaged community. Need any tips? Have any questions? Want to celebrate your plant's first ever bloom? Overgrown Oasis community is always eager to support, guide, and cheer you on.
Overgrown Oasis is more than just a platform. It's your new plant-loving adventure and community home. So dive into the excitement, connect deeply, and watch your plant dreams bloom alongside friends. You can find Overgrown Oasis by visiting overgrownoasis.com.
Your ultimate plant-loving community awaits.